Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 it's Monty, and this is the Rockcast.
Of course it is.
You know, you can love me, you can hate me, you can disagree with me, or you can agree with me. But the one thing you can't do is stop me. I am back with episode 197, which means I'm only a couple episodes away from 200. And what happens when I get to 200? Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll stop.
Let's hope so.
But until then, I cannot be stopped.
Stop being ignorant!
Anyway, I hope y'all had a great Christmas and New Year's. And, you know, mine was pretty good. But it's winter, and I hate winter. Because it's cold, and where I live, we get snow. And the other day, my wife Lindsay was complaining about it, and I said, well, what are you going to do? It's global warming. And she said, well, if it's global warming, why is it 2 below? And I said, well, because it's winter. And she said, oh, you mean kind of like it gets hot in the summer? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, isn't that the way it's always been? And I said, no, global warming changed all that. And she said, well, how do you know that? And I said, well, because that's what they say. And she says, who's they? And I said, my TV.
Who is this moron?
Regardless, my point is that it's cold, and I don't like it. But hopefully you are somewhere warm and cozy, and my suggestion to you is just to sit back and enjoy the next 50 minutes to an hour of podcast excellence.
This is going to suck really bad.
Yeah, so like I said, I had a good holiday season, but I'm always glad to get it over with. Because, you know, it's supposed to be joyous, but in actuality, there's just a lot of pressure around it. I mean, at first, you gotta find out what everybody wants, you know, and you gotta sneak around to buy it. Because you don't want them finding out ahead of time, but then again, you know, you don't want to disappoint them. So there's a lot of secrecy involved, and if you're like us, you've got kids, and they've all gotta get an equal amount of presents. Because, God forbid, if one kid gets 10 presents and the other gets 9, they're going to notice.
That is child abuse, people!
But, you know, as an adult, you don't really care anymore. It's more about the giving. But I gotta say, I did get some cool stuff. Lindsay gave me a leather biker jacket that's awesome. And some Curb Your Enthusiasm DVDs. But if you're parents, it's mostly about the kids. And this year, Lindsay was like, you know, I'm not going to go all out this year like I used to. I'm just going to get them a couple of things. But, of course, she ends up spending hundreds of dollars anyway, and she buys her daughter a PlayStation. And for the boy, he gets a hoverboard, which means now instead of just laying around the house and doing nothing all day, he now can glide around the house all day and do nothing.
Oh, that's good.
But, you know, I joke a lot about kids on this show, and the fact is that I love them, and that's why we spoil the crap out of them. But I gotta admit, it's a little tough when we spend hundreds of dollars on them for Christmas, and in return, they go get us something from the dollar store, and then resent us for asking them to pick their clothes up off their bedroom floor.
Duh.
Regardless, I guess I'd have to say Christmas was, you know, pretty good. However, New Year's Eve, I've got to be honest, was pretty lame. My wife Lindsay likes to force the whole family to play board games, even though none of us really want to. And I ended up eventually falling to sleep about 11:30 and woke up shortly after midnight. And so I quickly got up and I ran downstairs and there's Lindsay asleep on the couch. So we missed all the excitement of watching the ball drop and all that. But the one thing that I didn't miss that I wish I had of was all the New Year's Eve television shows. First I watched some New Year's Rockin' Eve with Ryan Seacrest and Jenny McCarthy. And then there was another one that had Steve Harvey as the host. And they always have a lot of lame musical guests, but this year, in between performances, we got lectured.
Nice.
Oh, yes. I couldn't even see in the new year without being told that I need to be more tolerant this year. And we all just need to love each other.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I bet you didn't know we were supposed to do that.
I did not know.
Yeah, apparently since Trump took office, we all hate each other and no one can get along.
That's right.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. And so instead of loving everybody, this year my New Year's resolution is to be more hateful. And honestly, I probably won't have to work at it that hard. But if I can't be more hateful, well, maybe I'll just settle for more boring.
How the hell is that possible?
Yeah, yeah, you think I'm boring enough already. Well, that's probably true. I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs, and that probably sounds really lame.
Right.
But there is something that I do that ain't boring, and I'm really good at it. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This guy right here likes to watch himself some TV.
Oh.
Yeah, TV. What'd you think I was talking about?
Oh, that seems kind of lame.
Yeah, well, anyway, since I'm talking about TV, how about we do a little What's on TV? Well, the good thing about the holidays is I had lots of time to hang out and lay around and watch a bunch of crap. And I watched several documentaries, and the first one was called Hired Gun. It was on Netflix, and it was about session and touring musicians who get hired by well-known artists. And a lot of these people weren't household names necessarily, but they were amazing musicians, and I found the movie to be really good. You had people who started out with Hilary Duff and ended up in Five Finger Death Punch. And there was a story about the main guy in Filter and how he started out as just a backup musician in Nine Inch Nails. And one of the reasons why I found this film so interesting is because I used to be a hired gun myself. A lot of you guys already know, but back in the 80s, I got a job playing bass with a Christian artist named Morgan Cryer. And he had a record deal on Star Song Records, and he needed a touring band. And I just jumped at the opportunity, and I think I was only making like $400 a month. It was almost nothing. But I got a lot of experience. I got my foot in the door of a record label and saw how all that worked. And most importantly, I met and played with a lot of great musicians that I still work with today. And I actually only played with Morgan for about a year because he eventually dumped the whole band and decided to use pre-recorded tracks. But I gotta say, the whole thing was worth it. I ended up springboarding from there to something else, then to something else. And since then, I've talked to a lot of guys who are like, I'm not gonna be a hired gun. I'm too good to be in somebody's backup band. But guess what? Most of those guys don't end up doing anything. Except maybe making a lot of home demos. But for me, being a hired gun turned out to be a great opportunity. And Hired Gun the documentary turned out to be a good flick.
I thought it was terrible.
Something else I watched that was kind of half documentary and interviews and half concert footage was Black Sabbath, The End of the End. And the live stuff was pretty good. I mean, Black Sabbath is a cool live band. But I'll have to say I got a little frustrated with the interviews. Because we all remember Ozzy from his old reality show, but he has not gotten any easier to understand over the years. And now it's just pretty much, you know what I mean, man?
Shut up!
All right, I got a question for you guys. Is anybody who is listening right now a self-proclaimed nerd?
Yeah!
Okay, I thought so.
Running around with their pocket protectors and their white short-sleeve shirts.
Well, I think all you nerds are really going to enjoy this next review because it's for the documentary about Rush's last tour called Time Stands Still. Because even though I'm not a complete geek, I still thought it was pretty good. I was a huge fan of Rush back when I was in high school and college, and I even saw him on the Farewell to Kings tour.
Whoa, whoa.
That's right, I'm an old guy. And I really liked their old stuff where Getty was screaming his brains out and it was just really raw and kind of heavy. But as the years went by, they got a little more proggy, and that's when all the nerds kind of took over. And you like to talk about Geddy Lee playing bass with his feet and stuff like that.
Geddy Lee, best bass player ever, come on.
And in this documentary, they talk to a lot of the fans who are just obsessed with Rush. And I kind of get it because they're an amazing band. But the thing that really interested me was some of their stories about being on the road for the last 40 years. And I don't think people realize how hard it is to be on the road for that long. It takes a toll on your body, and you have to be away from your families and loved ones. And Neil Peart was just like, hey, I don't think I can do this anymore. People expect him to be the greatest drummer in the world every single night, and they expect the whole band to play flawlessly every time, every note. And so I don't blame them for hanging it up. And by the end of the movie, they play their last show, and they walk off the stage. And there's all the Rush fans in the audience, and they're all just bawling. And I just looked at them, and my heart went out to them. And then I thought, wow, you people should probably get a life.
Huh?
I mean, seriously, some of these people had been to 180 shows. Come on.
What?
Besides, there's other bands you can follow. Surely you can find something else to do with your time rather than just traveling around the country, going to concerts, attending Rush conventions, and working on your scrapbooks.
These are people that have no lives.
Besides, look on the bright side. You've still got their albums. Go back and listen to that old stuff. It rocks. So that's some stuff that I watched over the holidays, but apparently I wasn't the only one watching TV, because I got a list from reigning co-top 10 champion Paul Morgan, and he sent me the top 10 Christmas movies he vegged out to this year. And it starts out at number 10 with Star Wars The Last Jedi. And he says, hey, it came out during Christmas, so sue me. Alright, not really a Christmas movie, but we'll let that one slide, Paul. But this next one is definitely a Christmas movie. At number 9, it's A Christmas Story. You know, I didn't watch that this year. I took a year off from A Christmas Story. But I did see that live thing they did on TV. And oh my God, was that freaking horrible. They tried to make it like a Broadway musical, and you had these annoying little kids singing. And then you had the dad going, oh, I got a major award. It's a lamp. I got me a lamp. And holy crap, it was just awful. But whatever, let's get back to Paul's list. And at number 8, he has The Polar Express. At number 7, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. At number 6, one that I watched this year, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Always great. At number 5, The Santa Claus. At number 4, Who Doesn't Love Elf? At number 3, Paul watched the animated version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. At number 2, it's A Charlie Brown Christmas. And at number 1, and Paul Morgan's favorite Christmas movie of all time, The Muppet Christmas Carol. Well, good job, Paul. Thank you so much. And Paul is such a good friend of mine. He always sends me a Christmas card every year. And this year, he also sent a gift card to a steakhouse here in Kansas City. And that was so cool of him. And Lindsay and I are going to go out to eat very soon and have a date. And I'm always surprised and blown away when people do something like that. And I said something to Lindsay about it, and she was like, well, they like your show and they like you.
I can't figure out why.
And I met all kinds of nice people back in December at the Galactic Cowboy Show. And I was hanging out afterwards talking to people, and a father and son came up. And their names were Scott and Kyle McAleer. I believe that's the way you pronounce the last name. And they were both just really cool, nice guys. And Scott was like, hey, Monty, we have our own plane. If my son and I flew to Kansas City sometime, would you let us take you and Lindsay out to eat? And I said, sure, man, I think that'd be great. And he said, well, awesome, we'll do it. And he said, in fact, I've got a whole top 10 list of things I want to talk to you about. And I said, well, great, send it to me. And so he did. And so now, without further ado, here is Scott's top 10 list of things he wants to talk about with me and Lindsay if he flies down to KC with his son and takes us out for barbecue. And Scott says, at number 10, the first thing I want to talk about is why I enjoy Galactic Cowboys music.
Hardly anybody does, though.
He says, a major problem with a lot of heavy music is, well, it's not very musical. Galactic Cowboys melodies and harmonies, however, are amazing.
Nobody's buying this crap.
At number 9, Scott would like my opinion on symphonic metal, like Symphony X and Epica. Symphonic metal. Well, I think it's really cool stuff. And I have seen some concerts on YouTube that I enjoyed. But honestly, I don't listen to it like every day or anything like that. But it is something I really appreciate.
So that's your answer?
All right. Number 8. Scott wants to talk about how he's not really a big fan of cats either. Well, yeah, there's something we have in common, Scott. However, I have learned to like Mr. Kitty, so hang in there.
He's horrible.
Number 7, Scott would also like to talk about how him and his son really enjoy the Rock Cast.
Why?
Number 6, he would like to talk about how he first heard Galactic Cowboys. Scott says he first heard GC back in 1991 on a syndicated radio program called Metal Shop. He said they played Why Can't You Believe in Me, and he went straight to the music store.
There's no need to do that anymore, haven't you heard?
At number 5, Scott wants to talk about how amazing it was that he'd never seen Galactic Cowboys until last December.
I cannot fathom doing that.
At number 4, Scott wants to talk about my art and how he appreciates the wide-angle perspective that dominates my paintings.
Won't that be interesting?
Well, yeah, I'd like to talk about that too, Scott. Maybe we can discuss that. And number 3, how sweet that last Galactic Cowboys show was. He says that him and his son Kyle have been all over the country this past year, seeing people like Iron Maiden and Ghost in Nebraska. They also went to see Hammerfall in St. Paul, Minnesota. But the show they enjoyed the most was seeing Galactic Cowboys in Houston, Texas.
Yeehaw!
At number 2, Scott wants to talk to me about how cool it was to meet Ben, Dane, Alan, and Lindsay, and myself, after the gig that night. He says, I can't say enough about how incredibly kind and friendly you all were to stay at the venue and talk to each person that stood in line to meet you guys. And Lindsay, of course, was beyond sweet. You're a lucky dude, Monty. Well, thank you, Scott. It was our pleasure. And me, a lucky man? Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah.
Very, very lucky.
Okay, he's got a hot wife. Yeah, boring.
And the number 1 thing that Scott would like to talk to me about if him and his son fly to Kansas City and take Lindsay and I out to eat, he would like to say, thank you, Monty, for providing me with music in the 90s that I could enjoy listening to.
Okay.
Thank you for putting together a new album of Galactic Cowboys music.
Okay, that's enough.
And thank you for taking the time and effort to help keep the Galactic Cowboys music alive.
End it! Stop it! Come on!
Well, once again, thank you, Scott. Great list, and thanks for all your support. And hopefully soon we can get together and do some barbecue.
It's never going to happen.
You know, since Scott was talking a lot about Galactic Cowboys, why don't I break down one of the new Galactic Cowboys songs off the new album?
Oh my gosh.
That's right. It's time for Monty's Total
Breakdown.
Let's do the first song off the CD, In the Clouds.
Hell yeah, let's do it!
Back around 1988, Alan and I were in a band called The Awful Truth. And when The Awful Truth broke up, Alan and I decided to stay together. And so we said, hey, let's start another band. Let's write some tunes. Well, Alan was into psychedelic Beatles kind of stuff, and I was totally into thrash metal and stuff like Faith No More. And we sat down in my apartment, we were both playing guitars, and I started playing the da 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 da, and Alan started playing the trippy kind of guitar part. And I had this little four-track Portis studio, and so we just did a demo right there in my apartment on a cassette. And Alan came up with these psychedelic lyrics about cotton fields and all this, and I was like, all right, let's go find a lead singer. And I knew this guy that was in a cover band named Ben Huggins. And Ben would call me up and say, hey, Monty, what do you think about me playing with you guys? And I go, I don't know, man. We were going to do stuff that was like Voivod and Metallica and all this. And Ben was like, oh, well, I don't really know much about that stuff, but I want to do it, man. And so I finally went, all right, we'll see. I'm going to come out to your house and I'll let you do some vocals on this song we've got. So I went out to Ben's and recorded him on the little four track. And then I took the demo back to Alan, and Alan was like, yeah, I like the guy. And so a couple of weeks later, I got together with a 19-year-old Dane Sanye, and we jammed, and I said, how'd you like to play in this band? Well, he was all about it, and not too long after that, we were ready for our first gig, and this was the first song we ever played live. Okay, so you're saying, well, all right, this was the first song you ever wrote as Galactic Cowboys. Why wasn't it on the first album? Well, I don't totally remember, but my guess is that either the producer or somebody at Geffen Records decided it shouldn't go on. But we did record it back in 1989 when we did the first album, and then it just laid around on tape for about, 28 years? And so when we got back together to start thinking about a new album this time, we went back and listened to some of the old songs. And almost the second we heard this, we were like, why did we not put this on an album? And so we just worked it up again and re-recorded it, and man, am I glad we did. One thing that I was hoping for when we got back together to do this album was that we could return to some of the things that we did on that first album when we first got together. We were so creative back then, we'd have long proggy breakdowns in the middle of songs, and this song was just a good example of that. So there you have it. It was the first Galactic song ever, and so maybe that's why it was the perfect song to kick off the new era of Galactic Cowboys. Okay, so the other day I got an idea for a new segment from a listener named Iris North. And Iris has written me many times, and the other day she suggested that I do a new segment where I let her interview me. And I thought, well, I've done interviews in the past with magazines and websites and TV shows and all that, but I've never done one here on the Rockcast. And so here we go, a Rockcast exclusive. Iris North interviews me, Monty Colvin, of Galactic Cowboys.
It will be spectacular.
All right, so I will be reading Iris's questions, and the first one is as follows. I understand that Bill Evans, who worked with Flying Colors, pitched Galactic to Jim Patulski, who was A&R repping for Mascot in 2015, and from there it was off to the album races. How was it going through that process? Well, yes, Iris, I've known Bill for a long time. He actually mixed my crunchy Loserville album. And a couple of years ago, I got a call from Bill, and he said, hey, there might be a label interested in signing Galactic Cowboys. Would you be interested in trying to get the Cowboys back together? And I said, well, yeah, I'd love to talk to them. Who are they? And he said, they're Mascot Records. And Bill put me in touch with a great guy named Jim Patulski. And sure enough, Jim wanted to sign us, and so I started talking to Jim just about every week for the next year. And sometimes we talked two or three times a week. And we finally ended up working out a deal and signing with Mascot.
This is fascinating!
Iris's next question is, why a record deal in this day and age? Well, yeah, a lot of people are just doing the crowdfunding kind of thing and all that, but we did decide to go with a record deal. And part of it was that we were guaranteed a certain amount going into the recording, and so we knew that part of it would be fully funded. And we also felt like it would be a good idea as far as the promotion of the album. And yeah, we knew we could get on Facebook and social media and get the word out there a little bit. But we were really hoping that the label would be able to promote us even more. Has it worked? Well, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Next question is, how did you decide which songs to keep on the album? Was that a band meeting session, or were you able to pick out the keepers as you wrote? Yeah, going in, we had about 16 or 17 songs, and our goal was to put 10 on the album. And along the way, we decided to wait on about three or four of them and save them. And we ended up recording 13 songs, and we just ended up putting them all on there. A couple are bonus tracks. And really, the hardest part was just trying to figure out what order to put them in. Oh, and coincidentally, Iris's next question is, what was the intent while sequencing the track order? Well, it is true that you want an album to kind of flow, and so you want the songs to connect well and flow into the next one and then the next one. And you also want to break up some of the tempos. In other words, you don't want all the slow songs to be right together, and you don't want all the mid-tempos or the fast ones to be all together. And we did have a few disagreements on which songs should be where, but I think we came up with something that works pretty well.
And what the hell do you know, old man?
All right, next, Iris says, the lyrics to Zombies are ticklishly ironic. It's a tad bit anti-tech, but at the same time, it was inspired by a TV show. Well, that's actually a very interesting and good point, Iris. It does kind of poke at people who just sit there like zombies watching their TVs. And yet I got the idea for the song by watching The Walking Dead.
Hypocrite!
But Iris also wants to know, how did you write the music for Zombies? Well, that song actually started with the chorus. I was playing guitar and I came up with that melody. And then later I came up with the riffs for the verses and the middle part.
Me with more. Come on, let's go.
Next, Iris says the song Hate Me is a real headbanger. It channels a killer late 80s thrash vibe, Exodus, Nuclear Assault, Older Testament. Dane has mentioned that Hate Me is also an older tune. What was done to Hate Me to include it on this album? Well, not too much, really. We had worked that up back when we were doing demos trying to get re-signed Galactic Cowboys after Geffen dropped us. And Dane had written those riffs, and then Dane ended up leaving the band, so we never did anything with the song. But we decided to re-record it for this album, and I said, you know, I love this song, it totally rocks, but I would like to galactify it. I said, I think it'd be cool if we put a melodic little vocal harmony part in there, and that's what we ended up doing. But other than the come on, hate me, it's pretty much the same. Come on and hate me, come on and hate me. Come on and hate me, come on and hate me. Get in line. Come on and hate me, come on and hate me. Come on and hate me, come on and hate me. Get in line. Iris's next question is, what do you like sonically about the engineering or production of the new album? Well, I think our CD sounds awesome. I think Alan did a great job. And what do I like best about it? My bass sound. I think we nailed it, and I think Alan captured the monster bass brutality.
I find it very crunchy.
Next question is, what tasks are you doing now that you didn't have to do when you were signed with Geffen or Metal Blade? Well, I probably do less now than I did back then. The other guys have really stepped up and do a lot of that stuff that I used to. Ben handles the merchandise now and a lot of the website stuff. Dane booked the last gig in Houston and handled all that stuff. And so everybody's involved now, and I think that's a good thing.
You don't do anything.
Next question is, the new disc is racking up some very good reviews. How much credence do you put in album reviews? You know, I've only read a few of them, and the good ones I really appreciate. And I actually haven't read any bad ones yet. But I'm sure we'll get some of those, and, you know, those people that write the bad interviews, I just consider idiots, and they don't know what they're talking about.
They're scum buckets.
But for the most part, I try not to pay a lot of attention to any of it, because more than likely, the people writing the reviews probably got the CD for free, and they don't have anything invested in it. And so I like to pay more attention to what the fans actually have to say. And so far, it's been tremendously positive.
I don't like it!
Next thing Iris wants to ask me is, how's your autobiography coming along? And what kind of chapter do you hope Long Way Back to the Moon adds? Yeah, I'm still working on that book. I've gone through it about 4 times now, rewriting it. And there's been times when I thought I had it almost done, but I was always hoping that there would be a happy ending to it. And now it looks like I'm going to add an extra chapter at the end of the book for what's gone on in the last couple years.
It never ends. It never ends.
All right. And now for some bonus questions. Okay. Iris says, what do you think is your worst vice or guilty pleasure? Well, you know, it used to be like sugar and sweets, like licorice and Mr. Pibb. But I've had to cut most of that out. And so as far as guilty pleasures, I don't know. I used to feel guilty about everything. Now I don't feel guilty about anything. But as far as vices, well, maybe TV, my computer, and taking sexy pictures of my wife. Yeah, let's just say that I'm really into the joys of amateur photography. And she is one hell of a model.
She's very likable.
The next bonus question from Iris is, back before you could order strings and things online, you had to brave a trip to the local music store. Did you ever get a clueless or high-pressure sales clerk, and what were you buying? You know, I have never liked music stores, and it's mainly because of the guys that work there. And I was usually going in to find an amp or a guitar or something like that. And once in a while, you'd find somebody cool that would help you, but a lot of times, they were just arrogant musicians. And a lot of them were just void of personality, other than just being kind of a dick. And so, yeah, now I just buy online and I don't have to deal with it.
I mean, that's genius, isn't it?
The next bonus question is, Monty, your devices give you fits. What gets traded first, the iPhone, the Hellmobile, or the TV? Well, if one of the TVs goes out, that's not a huge deal. Because you can actually get a big-ass TV these days for like $300 or $400. But I would love to get rid of the Hellmobile someday. For anyone who is under the misconception that I am a rich rock star, yeah, no. The steering column on that thing is literally held together with duct tape. And every time I drive somewhere, when I stop and get out, I can smell something burning. But like I've said before, the only good thing about the Hellmobile is that I have no fear of it getting stolen or wrecked. If somebody wants to key it or slam their door into it, be my guest.
And we know that this is a piece of crap.
Next question, Monty, what's the worst fate for a rock band? Muzak, the state fair circuit, or the residency in Vegas?
Fascinating question, really, isn't it?
Well, this is actually pretty easy, because Muzak, you know, you might make some money off that. If I ever hear an orchestrated version of one of my songs playing while I walk through the grocery store, cool. And the residency in Vegas. Well, if you don't know what that is, a lot of bands these days, like Guns N' Roses, I think Def Leppard did it. They'll go to a casino in Vegas and set everything up and just play night after night for like a week or 2 weeks or whatever. And I think that is an awesome deal. I mean, you know, people come to you. You don't have to like tour around and all that. Sounds great. But the state fair circuit, yeah, I know what you mean. That kind of conjures up images of, you know, like Quiet Riot with the original drummer. So I guess I'll go with that one. And let's see. Finally, to wrap up this interview with Iris, the question is, Monty, what is your favorite band that only released one album? Well, funny you should ask, Iris, because I was actually thinking about this the other day, and it would be LSD, Life, Sex, and Death. They were absolutely brilliant, and I think they only put out the one album, but they were amazing live, and the other day my friend on Facebook, Jeff Allen, posted a picture of them. And I went on and commented, oh, I love that band. And then Alan Doss went on there later and said, yeah, me and Monty saw them several times. But lo and behold, I never imagined that later in the day, Alex Kane, the guitar player from Life, Sex, and Death, would come in there with another comment of his own and say, hey, we thought the same thing about you guys. And so that was just totally cool. And so I thought, well, hey, why don't I play some Life, Sex, and Death right here on the Rockcast? let's wrap things up with some odds and ends.
Do we have to do this?
First of all, I got chastised for a couple of things I said on the last episode. Kevin Montigny in New York emailed me to tell me that I mistakenly called Jason Bateman Justin Bateman.
How dare you?
Yes, apparently I confused his sister Justine Bateman, who used to be on Family Ties, with Jason Bateman, so I sincerely apologize.
Oh, hey! You suck!
I also heard through the grapevine that at least one or maybe two people were upset about my comments about bullying. I actually got accused of being in favor of child brutality and child abuse. But of course, if you know me, you know that couldn't be further from the truth. Because you can bet your ass that if one of my kids was actually getting physically beat up, I would go and deal with the bully myself. The fact is that I actually hate bullies, because I got bullied myself in junior high. I was a little skinny runt, and they used to chase me down the halls and trip me. I had some of my stuff destroyed and stolen, and oh my God, did I ever get teased and made fun of. But I survived, and I didn't need an anti-bullying campaign to save me. And if these schools really want to help our kids, maybe they should teach them stuff like how to carry on a conversation. Or I know, how about telling them, don't eat laundry pods.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, have you heard about this? Kids are actually making videos for YouTube where they're eating laundry detergent.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, these are the same kids who are going to be voting in a few years. That's a scary thought. But I've actually got an idea as to how to fix all this. How about we as parents, instead of expecting the schools and the government to raise our kids and teach them right from wrong, we teach them to respect others and not be total dumbasses.
Ah, there you go.
But I think most people out there who listen to this show, you know what I'm saying, and you get it. And you certainly don't have to agree with me on everything, and if there's something you want to talk about, just drop me a line. And like always, you can message me on Facebook, or you can get a hold of me on my website, MontyColvin.net, where you can also find my CDs, t-shirts, and paintings.
Okay, yeah, we're going to do that.
And finally, I went to a concert last week. I took Lindsay to see Black Veil Brides and Asking Alexandria for her birthday. And I know, if you're over 40, you probably don't like these bands because you think they're young and screamo and whatever. And, well, that's not actually correct. And I would also say I'm sorry you feel that way because you're missing out on some good music. They're actually two really good bands, and when we got there, Asking Alexandria was already playing. I think we only missed their first song, though, and they were just outstanding. I've seen them about 5 times now, and this was the best they've ever been. They rocked seriously hard, but at the same time, they did a little acoustic thing right in the middle, and their singer, Danny, just sang amazing. The guy's got a killer voice, and they seem to be just getting more and more melodic with each album. However, in between bands, I was standing there waiting, and naturally, I get approached by somebody in the audience. I have no idea who they are, but they just come up to me and start talking. I'm not sure why this happens, and it's okay, but every single concert I go to, this happens. This guy taps me on the shoulder, I turn around, and he's like, "Hey, how's it going?" And it's this kid, and he tells me he's 19 years old. And so I'm thinking, well, he's probably not a Galactic fan. He's too young. And so I think, well, it's probably like usual. I'm being mistaken for a drug dealer.
Right.
And so I say, "Hey, what's happening?" And the kid goes, "I'm only 19, and I was wondering how much a beer cost." And that's when I figure out, oh, he wants me to buy him a beer.
Right.
But, of course, I really don't want to do that, so I just look at him and go, "Hey, I don't know, I'm drinking water." And naturally, he just looks at me and says, "Oh, that's cool, man, that's cool." But that's about as crazy as it got. The crowd was pretty chill. And it was very nice to be able to go to a concert and not have to worry about a mosh pit or jerks doing karate.
What's your problem?
Anyway, Black Veil Brides soon took the stage, and they were really good. The guitar players and the drummer are just phenomenal musicians. And really, the music is just a nice mixture of classic metal like Priest and Maiden, mixed with a little Billy Idol, Kiss, and, I don't know, the Misfits. So Lindsay and I really enjoyed the whole evening, but at the end of the night, we both walked away there singing the same song. It was Someone Somewhere by Asking Alexandria. Lindsay really loved the acoustic version of this that they did, but I like the one that's full up. And I'm going to end the show with that tune, and I think you'll dig it.
I'm not so sure.
But that's going to do it for me for now. I'll be back soon with another rock cast, but until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me. And
rock on.
End.